Mitzvah Lamed Tes 139. Shelo lechol mi besar chatos hanasos bifnim. We shouldn't eat the flesh of the sin offerings that are partially, some of the service of them is performed inside the building of the Beis Hamikdash. Shelo yochu hakohanim mi besar chatos hanasos bifnim. The kohanim should not eat the flesh of these offerings. Kolomar meosan chatos shu mazin mi damon b'mizbeach hapanim mishaya b'heichal. So there are certain ones of the sin offerings they used to sprinkle the blood, not on the outer altar, but on the inner altar, which we normally associate with the ketores or the incense. Shneamar, v'chol chatas asher yuva midama elohel moed l'chaper bakodesh lo se'ochel bo'ish tisarif. So it says that any chatas whose blood is brought in inside the tent of meeting to atone inside the sanctuary should not be eaten, rather it should be burnt in the fire. Lashon Sifra, because again, some of the chatos are eaten. The Lashon Sifra, the language of the halachic medrash of Vayikra is ba'ish tisarif, shall be burnt in fire, kol shuto and sarif, alav arla below sase alechilaso. So since it's the pasuk says, should not be eaten, it should be burnt in fire. So it connects the not to be eaten to the burnt in fire. The anything, there is a negative command, not only a positive commandment to burn it in fire, but rather to eat. The negative commandment not to eat it as well. V'chol chata shedama ton hazaya bifnim, that any chatas whose blood is sprinkled on the inner altar, kolomar b'mizbeach shaya b'heichal, hayu nisrafin, these are all burnt completely. Yadua hadavar meforesh b'ksuvim, it's obvious, and explained in the text of the Torah itself, v'chol achatos shelo ayu mazin midaman lifnim, ela b'mizbeach shabachutz, and any of the chatos that were only sprinkled on the outer altar, Hayunechalon, those would be in Valzesh Nemar Mikroze, Shekol Chata Shadina Bisrefa Lo Yochlu Mimena. So it means that any chatas which is supposed to be burnt and not supposed to be eaten, so that should be, you should not eat from that. Uprate Hachatos, Nezame and Nisra Veza Nechal Meforesh Bakasuv, which in other words we've said very nice so far, the categories of which have a negative commandment and which must be eaten. So which is one that's to be burnt and which one is supposed to be eaten, as explained in the Torah. Mash einu mevor yafa v'mikra perish lanu chachamenu zichronim l'vracha bizvachim. And anything that's not explained explicitly in the Torah is explained very well in the Gemara in Maseches Zvachim. I'm sorry. Kvar amarnu kiva prate akarbanos ein lanu bahem esek. So we're not going to explain the reasoning behind all the sacrifices. Why? Whether it's to be burnt or it's to be eaten, so we're not going to explain. Just as we've said before, that we don't try to come up with reasons for each of the individual services of the karbanos. That's better left up to the mystical scholars. Midini hamitzvah, the locals of the mitzvah, masha amru zichronim livracha, demikevan shenichnas dam achatos anecheles bo almoed pasul. That not only once it's been sprinkled, but as soon as the blood of the, let's say there was a chatas that's supposed to be, and that the blood is not supposed to be sprinkled on the inner altar, because remember, that was just two mutually exclusive halachos. So if the blood is not to be sprinkled on the inner altar, and you bring the blood into the building of the temple, then it already causes the korban that was supposed to be eaten to become invalidated.
Yes, good.
Right, so the, we saw that the chatas of the entire congregation sins, or a seir which is brought for the performance of Avodah Zarah, of idol worship, so those are sprinkled in the, their blood is sprinkled inside the temple building, and, the other ones, the regular chatos, are the eaten ones, right?
So these are the serious ones.
So once the blood goes into the temple building, even though it hasn't been sprinkled yet, and that chatas was not supposed to be sprinkled on the inside, rather that chatas was supposed to be eaten, so it already becomes pasul, becomes invalidated. V'lam du lomar kein mizeha mikra sha'amar. The chol chatas asher yuva midama. Since the Torah doesn't say all the chatas whose blood is sprinkled, it says any chatas whose blood is brought in to be sprinkled in the inner altar. So already, once it's brought into the temple building, then it becomes invalidated. Lo se'ochel. Then at that point, it should not be eaten. V'davka. In other words, even if it was a sacrifice that was supposed to be eaten, if they accidentally bring its blood into the inner building of the temple, then it becomes invalidated and it may not be eaten, even though ordinarily it was supposed to be eaten. So one of the conditions is that it has to be brought in the normal manner of going into the building. So because it says yuva means to be brought in, since it just says to be brought in, it means in the normal manner. If it goes in with a minor gate, let's say there's a little side entrance, it's complicated. Yeah, if it goes in the side entrance, so there was sunlight, for example, and you dropped it in through the sunlight, then that is not a problem, and that would not invalidate the sacrifice from being eaten. The lav derech biyahu is not the normal manner of bringing in the blood, so therefore that's not a problem. The huadin lachatos anisrafos. The same halacha applies to the chatos, which are supposed to be burnt, like the seer of Avodah Zarah, the he-goat that was brought for idol worship. So those are supposed to be brought in and sprinkled on the inner altar. So in other words, every chatos, when its blood is brought into a more inner place, then it's supposed to be brought in, it becomes invalidated. So for a chatos, which is supposed to be eaten, where the blood is sprinkled on the outer altar, if it's brought into the inner to the inner room, to the heichal of the Beis HaMikdash, then it becomes invalidated. And if the chatos...
The carbon is invalidated?
Yes, the carbon is invalidated. So then if the... Well, let's say there's the blood of the chatos, which is supposed to be sprinkled on the inner altar, supposed to be brought into the heichal, then... That if that's brought in one step more into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, to the inner sanctum, where that is not supposed to go, it's not supposed to be sprinkled there, then it becomes invalidated. So each korban becomes invalidated when its blood is brought in one room more inner words than it's supposed to be. Exactly. Shegam bahen anikore v'chol chatas asher yuva midamah penima. So that also you could interpret the pasuk as referring to anything that's together more inner than it's supposed to be. Shemokom zepnima limkomanu. The Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, is more sanctified than the place and more internal than the place that it's supposed to be sprinkled. Yeser proteb zvachem. Again, all this is explained in Maseches Zvachem. The Noheg Isser, people are probably going to be hunkering once we, now we've all these things that are, all these mysterious things are explained in Zvachem after we finish the Sefer HaChinuch, we'll have a shir in Maseches Zvachem from beginning to end. Okay. Muadin lechatos hanisrafos. I'm sorry, we did that. But yeah, noheg iser achilas chatos penim bakohanim. This is for the kohanim. Muadin lechol adam. So, in other words, really, this directive is directed towards the kohanim because they're the ones who are dealing with the sacrifices. But let's say someone else, you know, runs into the Beis HaMikdash and stuffs his face with the chatas where that its blood has been brought into a more inner place than it's supposed to be, that person would also be liable to the punishment. Shederech klal ne'amar lo se'achel, should not be eaten at all. Ve'hover ve'achal mena kazayis loke, again, if you eat an olive's bulk, then you receive the penalty of lashes, the normal penalty for the performance of a negative commandment.
But you only get punishment.
Mitzvah kuf mem, 140. Mitzvahs Maisa Ha'asham. How is the guilt offering supposed to be performed? Shenitzavino Shiasu Akohanim Meleches Korban Ha'asham Al Ha'inyan Hanizkar Bakosuv. So the Kohanim should do the Asham as it explained in the Torah. Shenemar Bezos Torah Ha'asham Kemoshe Kasu BaParsha. As it says in the Parsha. Lo Amarti Lach Shein Lanu Lichtov Shorash B'Melachos Elu Lafi Shein Prote Akorban Bein Lachazar Achar Tamon Kistum Hadvarim Vachasum. Again, Sefer Chinuch says once again that we shouldn't search for detailed explanations for each stage in the process of performance of the karbanos, just general rule, general ideas behind the karbanos. Dinei ha'asham, zochainu k'tzasim l'mala b'parshas v'ekra, say, you remember we were talking about for what sins an asham must be brought. So then he explained a little bit in intro to this karban. V'adayin nodia sheha'asham eino ba'la olam ela mizichrei k'vasim bilvad. It's only brought from male of the sheep family. Yesh asham ba migdolei hamin. Some of them are brought from the older species, older members of the species. And how old is that? Remember what we said? 1 year. When they're over 1 year. And those ashamos are, now we have a really convenient note where I didn't have to write down to remember. Asham gizelos, asham ilos, asham shivchachurva, asham talui, shibayim B'nai Shtei Shanim. So the Asham for stealing, or for sacrilege of temple property, or for relations with a half-freed maidservant, or a sin offering which is brought because of a doubt, those are brought from the older ones, in other words, that are 2 years old. And what do we call 2 years old in halachic terminology? In the second year. So between the first and second birthdays we're talking about. The Ishmin HaKtanim that are brought before the first birthday. So those are Asham Nazar, Asham Mitzora, and those are for the Nazarite sin offering and the sin offering of somebody who has tzaras, a skin affliction. Those are brought under the first year. Maasei, which are called in Hebrew, B'nei Shana, meaning within the first year. Not that they're, nowadays, when you say in modern Hebrew, Ani Ben Shana, it means you're 1 year old. And the one-year-olds are expressing themselves that clearly, but means they're 1 year old, but meaning between the first and second birthday, but in halachic terminology, you go under. So that's why, like, also when you say for bar mitzvah that or bar mitzvah that it's 12 years, that it says 12 years in a day, it's that if you become bar mitzvah, 12 years a day, 13 years in a day. So in our when we think in contemporary terminology, I'm 13 years and a day old, so let's say your birthday is July 2nd, then you call yourself 13 years and a day when you have 13 years later on July 3rd. But that's not what it means in halacha. When you say the 13 years and a day or 12 years a day, it means when you get to July 2nd or whatever the Hebrew equivalent is. That's why your bar mitzvah day. Yeah, so because you finished your year, you go according to 365 days. You finish your year on the day before, and now you're already 1 day into your 14th year or your 13th
that's
year,
right.
If you're a girl.
The first day of the next.
So that's why you become a bar bat mitzvah on your Hebrew birthday and not the day after Hebrew birthday. The Yesh Maaseyo B'Shchito Zrika Umlicha V'Haimurin V'Tnufa B'Hashem Oshave. So all is the same in terms of how they're slaughtered and the blood is sprinkled on the altar and the innards are and they're salted and the innards are offered on the altar and how they're waved. That tnufa seems to be a mistake here because they're not waved, but rather it should be the achila, apparently. That's what the note tells us.
Is it waved
then? Yeah, there's no, he says, the Michas Kinuch says, tevas tnufa, tnufa hitos hamatik. That's a scribal error. The lohaisa tnufa b'asham rak b'asham etzara kishehu chai. That's only one particular instance do you have tnufa by an asham. So it doesn't make sense that he could say that the tnufa is the same by all the ashamos. Chutz me'asham etzara sheishinu iktas bekabalas damo. That there's a little bit different in the reception of the blood for an asham that has to do with someone who has a skin condition. That two Kohanim receive the blood, one with a kli and one by hand. Okay. The Yeser Prati HaMitzah Mivarim Bezvachim. The rest of the details are again Masech HaZvachim, which is a rich treasure trove that most people don't learn unless they do Daf Yomi. V'noegis B'zman HaBayis B'zichrei Kehuna. It applies obviously to the Kohanim only. V'choen ha'over alev alo hikrif ha'asham kemishpatul b'italasei he by neglected to perform a positive commandment if he changed anything from the prescribed manner of performing the asham. Mitzvah Kuf Mem Aleph, the 141st mitzvah. Mitzvahs Maisa Zevach HaShlomim. We're introducing a new type of korban that we haven't really learned about before, which is the Shlomim, which is a more relaxed form of a korban from what the other ones that we've been studying so far. Shenitzdavinu Shiyasu HaKohanim Maisa Korban HaShlomim Kemishpat HaKosu BaParsha. That the Kohanim have to perform the Shlomim exactly as it says in the Parsha. Shenemar Vim Zevach Shlomim Korbanu. And then it's going to introduce it. The Amar Od, people are going to, when we get to Vayikra this year, people are going to have a different understanding. We're going to say, oh, we learned that pasuk was brought in the Sefer HaChinuch to talk about this mitzvah. This will be a little different this year. The Amar Od, Lahashlama Samalocha, Vizos Torah Zevach Hashlamim, Imal Toda Karbanu, again later in the Torah, it tells more details. Uvarba Shemos Nichlalim in Yani HaKarbanos Kulan. So he's going to tell you now there are four general types of korbanos into which every other type of korban fits. What are they? Ola, the burnt offering, which we said is burnt completely on the altar. Pechatos, the sin offering, which are different types, as we said. Some are burnt, some are eaten. the Asham and the sin offering, many types of which we've discussed before, Ushlamim, which we're introducing now, Shekol Korban Sheakriv Utzibur Oyachad Me'ela. That all of the korbanos can be fit into any of one of these four categories. It feels like more than twice that he told us that we shouldn't look for reasoning behind all the details of the halachos of the korbanos. It could be that it has to do with how the Sefer Chinuch was rearranged. And he said we've had it so many times because this is a positive commandment, so it really came earlier in the original Sefer Chinuch. Midini ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah, ma-shamer zichronim livracha, she-shlamim boi min ha-kvasim, min ha-izim, min ha-bakar. So again, relaxed rules. They can either be from sheep, the sheep family, or the goat family, or the cattle family. Have your choice. Min ha-zicharim, min ha-knekevos, from male or female. Min ha-gedolim, min ha-ktanim, from the little ones or the big ones. Ve-in ha-of ba-shlamim. Ah, we have one restriction, is that you cannot have a bird be a korban shlamim. Uktanim nikraim mi ben shmonas yomim vad shana tmima miyom liyom. So again, what's a small animal? That's from 8 days old until 1 year old. So you're not allowed to offer a korban before 8 days old because that's what the Torah says. That 7 days the animal should not be offered as a korban. And then on the miyom hashmini v'ala yeratzel korbani shel Hashem, that only when the animal is 8 days old can it become a korban. Nisabra hashana nisabra lo, that if the, let's say, goes according to the Jewish year, that doesn't go according to 365 days, or however many days you want the year to contain, from when the animal was born, but it goes according to the first year and the second year, it goes according to the Jewish year. So nisabra hashana nisabra lo, that if we had an extra month, we have a second Adar in the Jewish year, so the animal remains within its first year, and even though it'll really be 13 months from when it was born. Kilomar v'yia katan ad tashlum ha'ibor. So it'll be a small animal until the end. V'gadol nikra b'bakar mishana v'ad shaloshanim. And a cat, what's called a big cattle? Big cattle is from when it turns what we would call 1 year old until the end of the third year. Uvetzon mishana v'ad shtei shanim shlemos. So if you have less time. So for cattle, you have 2 years after it's a katan that is called a gadol. And for in the sheep family, you only have 1 year from the first birthday to the second birthday. Yes, or alkein, if it's older than this, harehu zokein. It's an old animal. It has a long white beard and a cane, and it can't really walk. Ve'ein makriven oso. And we do not offer an animal when it's over, for a cattle, 3 years, and for the sheep family, 2 years old. And there's a discussion in the Mefarshim as to what aspect of this is the Raisa and what's the Rabbanan. So some say that perhaps really Midaraisa it's only considered to be Zokain, an old animal, when it looks weak, when it looks not nice. So that's the Raisa. You're not allowed to offer that as a korban because it's not so nice. We have a rule in Tanakh or Hakrivehu na lefecha secha, and in the book of Malachi, it's in Haftarah, with that he says that you're offering all these animals on the altar that are not so nice, and would you offer such a thing to your governor. Yeah. To a human person that you're looking to impress, would you offer such a thing? No. So of course, alachas kama v'chama, you should not offer that to God. So if it looks old, so that's possible, that's not allowed. Daraisa. What?
This means
so if it's, I mean, on the Daraisa level, if it's over 2 or 3 years old and it's still vigorous, then you could offer it as a korban, but derabanan, and we make it all the same. We have a blanket rule that when it's over 3 for cattle and over 2 for sheep, so you're not allowed to offer it as a korban. Barba minin heim hashlamim. There are 4 types of korban shlamim. Ha'echad shalmei tzibor, v'hashlosha shalmei yachid. One is a shlamim that comes for the entire congregation. That's not so usual. We normally associate shlamim as the, you know, fun, happy sacrifice that you bring to the Beis HaMikdash, and you basically get to have a roast lamb dinner after a minor donation to the Beis HaMikdash. So, but in one case, there's Shalmei Tzibor, Nikroin Kodshei Kodshim. So there's one type of Shlamim which is offered on behalf of the entire congregation, and that's a fully holy, super holy Kodshei Kodshim offering. Ve'in latzibur shlamim ki'im korban echad. There's only one type. V'hu shnei kvasim aboyim shtei alechem batzeres. So there's the type, there's the special offering on Shavuos of the Shtei Alechem, of the two loaves of bread that are brought on Shmini Atzeres. So on Shavuos. So accompanying that, there is a Shlamim, which is brought on behalf of the entire congregation. Osan Shnei Kvasim, Hena Nikraim Zivchei Shal Nitzibor. Those two lambs are called the Shlamim of the congregation. V'necholim l'kohanim chutz min ha'imurim kechatas v'cha'asham. And they basically are eaten the same way as a sin offering and a guilt offering, which is that they can be eaten by the kohanim, except for the emurim, the innards, which are offered on the altar. But they don't get to be eaten by the owners, because there are no owners. There's the whole congregation of Israel as the owners. V'amalochu shelehen kion shchita zrika hefshid mituach umlicha v'aktaris emurim mefarash v'mnachas. And exactly how those are done, how they're slaughtered and the blood is sprinkled and the skin is stripped and they're cut up into pieces and they're salted and the innards are offered on the altar, as I'll explain to Maseches Menachos. Why not at Zvachim? To Menachos, because it accompanies the Mincha. It accompanies the Korban, the Shtei Alechem. Mishalmei Yochid, the individual Shlamim, Nikroim Kodshim Kalim. Those are light offering. That's like I was saying before. The Shlamim we usually associate with not so intense. Umokom Shchitasan, where they can be slaughtered. Where can the Shlamim be slaughtered? We should all know this from the Mishnah that we say every day in Ezehu Mekoman, if we're paying attention. So Shchitasan Bechol Mokom Ba'azara. That as opposed to Kodshim Kodshim, the really holy offerings like the Ola and the Chatas, etc., though that can only be slaughtered in the northern section of the temple courtyard. So the Kodshim Kalim, these Shlamim, the lighter Kodshim, less intense Kodshim, can be slaughtered in any place within the premises of the temple courtyard. And perhaps even if they're slaughtered in the temple building itself, even though they're not supposed to, so that would still be acceptable, b'dieved at least. Maisa Azrika, the Hefshir V'nituach, and how the blood is sprinkled, and the skin is stripped, and they're cut up, and Tanufa, and they're waved. They are waved, that the owners wave the offering. You have to go something like this, and the Kohanim put their hands under the owner's hands, and they wave the offering. At least part of it. V'afrashas emurin mefurash b'menachos, and the emurim are and how they're taken out is all explained in Maseches Menachos. V'ashlosha minin also explained in Menachos. V'ashlosha minin elu shel shalmei yochid shavin hein b'menachos elu. So they're all the same. There are three types of individual shlamim. They're all the same by this. I'm going to tell you the difference between the three categories of the individual shlamim, which are of a lighter level of sanctification. Da, no. So one category is the shlamim that comes without an accompaniment of bread. Those are the types of shlamim that you have to bring when you come visit the Beis HaMikdash on a holiday. So part of visiting the Beis HaMikdash on holiday, that's how we have the principle of Ein Simcha Ela B'Basar, that the way you truly have joy is by eating meat. And that really comes from the principle that you have to be happy on the holidays, and part of the intrinsic observance of the holiday is that you have to bring a Korban Shlamim on the holiday. So the Simcha really, the problem is that even though this is really talking about specifically the sacrificial meat, but we extend that nowadays. The Rambam paskins that even nowadays on Yantiv, then you have to eat meat, because even though really when the Gemara says Ein Simcha Ela B'Basar, that the Simcha really comes from eating meat, that's talking about the sacrificial meat, Rambam says still it's still sort of reminiscent of that, so it's proper to eat meat on Yantiv nowadays. He doesn't explain this, he just says you have to eat meat on Yantiv. Before the commentators struggle as to why that should be the case, because the Gemara is clearly talking about only the sacrificial meat. But what everybody agrees that you have to do on Yantiv is drink wine. That for sure, there's that applies when the Beis HaMikdash is around and when it's not around. That's for men. Women, if they enjoy wine, that's fine. It's fine if women enjoy wine if they want to drink wine. But technically, the way the halacha is formulated by the codes is that men eat meat and drink wine, and women get new clothes for Yontif. That's how each gender.
Upper gold. most of the new clothes.
So, but again, it's subjective. Everybody has to figure out what makes them happy. Well, bring them joy
books
for Yanta.
Make me happy.
Good. So, we should get books before Yanta.
I did.
Good. If books make you happy, you should get books before Yanta. Absolutely. Okay, these are not absolute, they're not totally objective halachos. We tried, if it works for you, so you should try to fulfill the way it says in the codes, but if it doesn't work for you, so you should do something that makes you really happy. So, ve'elu en anikroim shlomim, v'ashneini shlomim haboim im halachem hayadua. The second type is shlomim that come with an accompaniment of bread. V'hu abba b'neder o b'nedava. And that comes that can be offered whenever you want. That's a neder or a nedava. You can vow to bring it or just bring it as an optional sacrifice. But v'ilu ha-shlomim nikraim toda v'alechem abayim ol nikra lechem toda. One type of shlomim is the toda offering, the thanksgiving offering, which comes with an accompaniment of bread. So, What's the toda is really that Sefer Chinuch seems to be indicating over here that the toda offering, the Thanksgiving offering, is really optional in and of itself, but that's not so clear. That according to other authorities, when you go through a dangerous situation and you save from a dangerous situation, so you must bring a toda offering. And what's the equivalent nowadays to bringing a toda offering? What do we do instead?
Benchi
Gomel, exactly. Yeah. So benching gomel is considered to be the next best thing nowadays to bringing a korban toda. Yeah, sure. I'm not saying against give tzedakah. Yeah. Sure, give tzedakah. That's great. Yeah. But I'm saying the technical replacement for the korban toda nowadays is benching gomel.
Yeah.
V'hamin hashlishi shlomim shemakriv hanozer biyom melos yamei nizra. There's a shlomim that the Nazarite brings on when he finishes his days of being a Nazarite. Those are also accompanied by a side of bread. That is the ram of the nazir. It has a different halachos, as we're going to explain. So, of the shlomim, so the kohanim get the chest and the leg. The shok in an animal, it refers to, an animal, I believe, the leg has three joints. The hind leg has three joints, two joints, and there's the bottom section, the middle section, and the top section, as opposed to the human leg, which only has one joint, and there's only two sections, the bottom and the top. So the shok in an animal refers to the middle section. This is a topic of discussion amongst the poskim. And in a human, a shok refers to the bottom section. Shok refers to the calf, yeah. Shok refers to the calf, like the Gemara talks about batei shokayim, shok coverings, which are socks, basically, or boots. Man and echalam lakohanim kamashuras, how much they have to eat. Hazroa b'sheila min el nazar an echal lakohanim milvad chazev ashok gamkin kamashiro. So how much do the kohanim have to eat from? There's another halacha specifically by the ram which is brought by the Nazarite at the end of his period of being a nazar. That is, the kohanim eat the foreleg, part of the foreleg at least. The Kohanim eat part of the foreleg, which is cooked with the rest of the animal, which is called Hazra B'Sheila, the cooked foreleg from the ram. So Hanechal Kohanim Milvad Chazev Ashok Gamkin Kamashiro Va'ize Makom In Habayis Mivashanoso. So where did they cook it? It was a certain lishka, one of the compartments in the temple courtyard, which they used to cook the El Nazirin. So the halacha of Zeroa B'Sheila, if you look in the fact that the Kohanim have to eat the cooked foreleg from the ram of the Nazir, if you look in the seventh parak of Maseches Chulin, it discusses how it suggests that as a source for the halacha of Bitul B'Shishim. That because the foreleg, which is eaten by the Kohanim, has to be cooked with the rest of the sacrifice together, but yet not impart its taste. to the rest of the sacrifice in order to the, for the owner of the sacrifice to be able to eat the rest of the sacrifice, because the foreleg could only eat by the Kohanim.
Oh my goodness, goodness.
So, how, what is the ratio of foreleg to the rest of the sacrifice? Mm-hmm. Two different opinions there in the Gemara, exactly how to calculate it. One, one is 1 in 60 and one is 1 in 100. So, but that, again, these are, it's trying to find a scriptural source, but the basic idea by Bittul V'Shishim is that we assume that taste something, unless it's designed to be particularly pungent, will not impart taste if it is only 1 in 60 of the volume of the rest of the mixture. V'dinei ha-lechem ha-boim shnei minim min ha-shlamim v'hein toda ve'el nazar mikama esronin hu. So how big is it? Ve'eza mehen ba'chometz, ve'eza mehen ba'matzah levad, v'ha-ba'chometz v'matzah eich echolik. How do you split between the chometz and the matzah? V'cheitza mechamtzan. How exactly is the procedure for making of chometz? V'cheshva nachalos habos matzah kama mehen mafet tano rekikin umurbachos ha'kol bizvachem. So which, how, which kam is a mincha of a maifet tanur, which kam is thin wafer matzahs, minachos, so which kam has a different type of fried matzah, mincha, that's all explained in Maseches Zvachim. And it should be, the note here says that it really should be minachos. Okay. Vinyan oson habos matzah betoda hayakein. So when you have the ones which come as unleavened bread, when they accompany the korban toda, the Thanksgiving offering, this is how it used to be. May asara esronim shel kemach hayosin shloshim chalos. They used to take 10 esronim of kemach, so about 20 liters of flour. So out of that, they used to make 30 loaves of bread. Haasara mayan ayu nasos mafetanur. 10 were baked in the oven. Kolomar sholiu nasa bandava rakshu masimin beisasan b'shas lisha shminis log shemen. They used to put in each one an eighth of a log of oil. So what's an eighth of a log? A fourth of a log is a revias. So a revias is about 75 milliliters. So half of that is about 37 and a half. Right, accountant? Yeah? 37 and a half, approximately 37 and a half, 38. Whatever, milliliters of oil in each loaf. Shekein hu alacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. That's the received tradition that we have of how to do it. Ve'ein chiluk bein ha'asara shal rekikin. Oh, ve'ofin osan, sorry. They have to, you bake it like that. Ve'asara man nikros rekikin. 10 are called thin wafers. Ve'ein chiluk bein ha'asara shal rekikin. La'asara shal ma'ifetanur. El shebasara shal ma'ifetanur. Ayu ma'arved ba'in shminis lok shal shemen. Bishas lisha. So the difference is that the mafetaner, they used to mix in the 38 milliliters of oil while it was being kneaded. The haasara shal rekikin ayu moshkin osam b'shminis alok shemen achar afiyas mafetaner. And the thin wafers, they would take that same amount of oil, and instead of kneading it inside the dough, they would spread it on top of the dough, make sort of a glaze as it was coming out of the oven. The asara man ayum were bachos. 10 of them were prepared on a pan in a certain, fried in a certain manner. Perish revicha ushechotin achal v'mayim roschin v'ofin osamat. This is how it's going to explain how it's done. So they used to blanch the loaf in boiling water, and then you bake it a little bit. V'achar kach kola b'shemen, k'derech shekolim b'niyadim hasukonim b'ilfas. Then you fry it in a pan. You saute that piece of bread in a pan, just like you fry or pan roast sufganin. What's sufganin? Well, right. Now, sufganiyot in modern Hebrew are donuts, but in the times of the Gemara, sufganin refers to basically the same idea, some sort of fried dough which was very spongy. Comes from the lashon of sfog. Sfog means sponge. So the spongy dough type of baked goods. Umarbich b'shamnan shel asara haravuchos. Then you fry it in the oil of those 10 which are supposed to be prepared in this manner. Because there was a revias, there was 75 milliliters that they pan roasted it in. Kishir kol hashemen shalasrim chalos, which would be the oil for all the 20 loaves. The gam shir zeh shel shemen haravuchos halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. Again, is all received tradition of how to do it. It doesn't say anywhere explicitly in the Torah. And this manner of preparation that we just detailed is how, when it says murbach anywhere in the Torah, this is how you do it. Some of it is given to the Kohanim, some of it is eaten by the owners. It's all explained in Maseches Vachim. Again, this is applicable. How did the Shlamim went for the Kohanim during the times of the Beis HaMikdash? They're the ones who are doing the work. So you have, in some, the best case scenario, the Kohen simply neglected to perform a positive commandment, and worst case scenario, the Korban will actually become invalidated. Mitzvah Kuf Mem Beis, 142. Shelo lahoser mi besar Korban HaToda. We should not leave over, again, we just discussed what the Toda was, which is the Thanksgiving offering, so we shouldn't leave any of it over overnight. Shelo lahoser shum davar mi Korban HaToda ad haboker. We should not leave anything over until the next morning. So after it shechted that one day, so you shouldn't leave over more until the next day. So when it's discussing of the Korban Toda, which is one of the Shlamim we just discussed, it says you shouldn't leave it over until next morning. So just from this we learn out for all the other sacrifices. Why should it be limited to just the Thanksgiving one? No, they use that as an example, but really this halacha applies to all the Korbanos. So anything for the Toda is one day. Other Korbanos, maybe you have a little bit more time, but the same idea that after the time and frame in which it's supposed to be eaten, if you leave it over, then it has to be burnt. And it may not be eaten. So this lav is connected to a positive commandment. How do you fix it if you don't perform the... If you do leave it over, then you have to burn it. So that's called a connection, lavanita glase, that's called a negative commandment that's attached to a positive commandment. The same thing applies, for example, for stealing. You're not allowed to steal, but if you do steal, then the way you sort of make amends is by returning the object, paying it back, whatever. So it's the same idea over here, that you're not supposed to leave it over, but if you do leave it over, then the way you sort of make amends is that you burn it. Above in the eighth positive commandment of this, that's why a lot of things that really in turn nighttime mitzvos that really their time is until Los HaShachar, until dawn, midar rabban, and you only have until chatzos, until midnight to do it, to make sure that you don't delay it too much and go after dawn. So like Kriya Shema, nighttime Kriya Shema, really you have all night long to say Kriya Shema for nighttime, but and the Midrash Rabban, and you have to do it before Chatzos. V'sham kosavnu remez misharasha v'ktsaz dinav kiminageinu, we explained a little bit before about what this is all about. I don't know, but he'll explain more over here, right, in the next mitzvah. Shenitz tavinu mitzvah kuf mem gimel. The mitzvah 143, which is mitzvah sreifas nosar b'kodshim, the mitzvah to burn what is left over from the kodshim. Shestavino lisrof nosar v'hu basar hakodshim, b'sar hakodshim, shenishar achar avor zman achilas an amugbalahen. So like we discussed in the last mitzvah, so if it's left over after the time where it's supposed to be eaten, so you have to burn it. Shnemar v'nosar mi b'sar hazevach b'yom ha-shlishi ba'ishi sarif. It has to be burnt after the proper time. V'zos ha-sreifa hi mitzvah ha-sei. So, positive commandment, shekein amru b'mechilta gabi Pesach. So, that's right, like we said, b'mechilta gabi Pesach, v'lo sasir menu ad boker. You're not supposed to leave over the Pesach until the morning, v'anosar mimenu b'al boker b'ish tisrofu. As we learned yesterday. V'akos of litan asei alosa, asei demashmet shemitzvah sreifas, nosar aseihu. So, it says clearly in the mechilta, which is the halachic medrash on Shmos, that the burning of the nosar is a separate positive commandment, not simply a method of disposal of nosar, which you're not supposed to do. V'dina pigol v'anosar shave v'zeh. So the halacha of the pigol and the leftover offering is the same. What's pigol? Pigol is when you shechted a sacrifice with the intention not to perform it properly. So for example, to sprinkle the blood after the proper time, which we'll learn more about in the next mitzvah. So pigol, So that also has to be burnt. Sheesh mitzvah says, hey, gamke bisrifaso. Shematzinu akosov, motzi hapigul belosha nosar. So at certain points, the Torah refers to pigul in the same way it refers to nosar. So therefore, it has a lot of the same halachos. Mishor shei hamitzvah, what's the reasoning behind this? Lefi sheteva kol basar lihipasei b'shia v'livo lidei zirchon. That meat by nature gets bad. It goes bad and it rots. Ve'alkein lahagdolas dvar hakorban kemo shamarnu lamala. So again, one of the major principles that the Chinuch is bringing out by the Korbanos is that it's supposed to create a sense of majesty. That the Beis HaMikdash and the Korbanos. So in order for it never to get to the state, we have to burn it immediately. Nobody should ever say that sacrificial meat smells disgusting. Nobody should ever say such a thing. Everybody should just be impressed and happy with all the stuff going on in the Beis HaMikdash. That the best way of completely destroying something is burning. So that's even better than, let's say, if you would chop the meat up into little pieces and throw it into the wind. Or flushing it down the toilet. I didn't have toilets in those days. But the same idea. This idea is also found where? Bir chametz. When you're burning your chametz, it's a machlokes tanoim, whether you specifically must burn your chametz or whether you can also break it up into little pieces and throw it to the wind, or get rid of it in some other way. And even though we paskin that really you could get rid of the chametz anyway, that we really try to fulfill the opinion of the Tana, even though that you have to burn it specifically, even though normally we assume that when there is a disagreement between Tanoim and the Mishnah, once a really early sage is outvoted, then that's it. Then there's no idea that it's better to fulfill that his opinion when possible, as opposed to a lot of times when you have later authorities. So you have a lot of times we don't have such a clear-cut decision between them. So a lot of times we'll say, well, you know, really we rely on the majority opinion, but if possible, it's better to be concerned for the minority opinion as well. So in this case, we are concerned. We sort of try to concern ourselves with the minority opinion of the Tanoim of the early sages, because Sreifa is really the best way of destroying it, and it's considered to make more of a statement and more of an impression on us if we do something special. Who burns bread normally? Nobody burns bread. If you have leftover bread, you'll feed it to the birds or break in little pieces and throw it in the trash or whatever, even though that is technically acceptable for Pesach as well. We try to make Pesach special. Unless it's Shabbos, then you can't. If you have leftover, if Erev Pesach is Shabbos and you have leftover bread in the morning, then you have to figure out an alternate way to do it. Oh, that's also, apparently Rav Soloveitchik wasn't so into that, of destroying chametz. He felt that you're not allowed, it's not in the commonly accepted opinion, but apparently Rav Soloveitchik felt that you're not supposed to destroy chametz in any way on Shabbos, even because the etzem destroying, that if you have leftover bread from the Shabbos morning meal, when Erev Pesach is on Shabbos, you should simply, like, take a cake cover, you know those cake platters? It doesn't have to be that. It could be any type of vessel. It's just a vessel that would be appropriate for this. Take a cake cover and put it over the bread until Chol HaMoed, and then burn it on Chol HaMoed. So that takes guts. It takes guts to do that. What Jewish woman is going to allow that in her house?
Especially one with little kids running around.
Right. So, most people when Erev Pesach is Shabbos, they just, you know, break into pieces and flush it down the toilet or something. Right. So, egg matzah, right. So, egg matzah. That's not so posh.
Might have suggested that. I can't swear to that.
Yeah, according to the Shulchan Aruch, you are allowed to eat. Yeah, you are allowed to eat egg matzah on Erev Pesach, and it's not chametz. You're allowed. We have a minhag not to. We concern for the opinions that we use only pure fruit juice to bake the matzah, which is called egg matzah or eggs or whatever, or anything besides water. So we have the minhag not to eat that on Pesach, but we don't consider it completely chametz. We have the minhag not to eat it because eating is nisr kares, it's really bad. But we don't have any problem using it to owning it over Pesach, or according to most people, it's no problem to use it on your Pesach dikka dishes either. So that's why if you want to have everything completely Pesach, they can use egg matzah on Erev Pesach. So according to that approach, then that's okay. But then you have no realm. Then if there's any leftover, you just put it away till after Reza. You don't have to destroy it at all.
It's not a
one. I don't know. I'm not so into the Agmatza, but I mean, it's acceptable. According, there are many opinions that it's acceptable. I'm not so whatever. Well, I don't have to worry about this for a while. When we have our, in a few years, when we have our Pesach, Shechalis, and Shabbos, if we are still around, then I mean, hopefully we'll all still be living. That's not what I meant. I meant if we're all in the same format as we are now in terms of a congregation, then well, maybe we'll discuss it more in detail then. Yeah, everybody has earlier davening.
So you did like a Mishnah.
No, because you have to finish your meal before
the
Zman of Isser Chametz. So everybody, all shuls daven really early on when it's Erev Pesach and Shabbos, sure. Okay. And some people want you to have two meals because they want you to have Shalosh Shudas. So they want you to have daven really early so you have two meals before this. You have to have one meal and then you have to have a hefsek. You have to have an interruption between the first meal and the second meal, otherwise. All right, so no, you don't do that. But you just not finish really early. You have your first meal, you take a walk around the block or something. Well, then you have your second meal. But luckily for you, so I'm not so into the two meals in the morning. So if we have Erev Pesach on Shabbos, so we'll just leave time for the one meal in the morning.
So what do you do with Shalosh Shudas?
Matzah.
Shalosh Shudas. Shalosh Shudas, you could use egg matzah if you accept that approach, or you just don't wash.
Okay.
I mean, probably the Vilna Gaon writes this on his commentary on Shulchan Aruch that probably everybody's looking for etzas. You know, trying to figure out a chap of how to be yotzei shalosh shudas on Erev Pesach Shechal Yom Shabbos. So he points out that the simple understanding is that there is no shalosh shudas. There is no obligation to have shalosh shudas when Erev Pesach Shabbos. Because it's impossible.
Okay.
Even though you could come up with a way of doing it, maybe there are problems with all the ways.
Also,
so then
you're supposed to go into the Seder with an appetite.
Right, so what you do is you have a snack in the afternoon. You call it shalosh shudas. Even though really we hold that it's more proper to really you should wash for shalosh shudas, but
how about
you can't have matzah either.
Yeah, but it's not really matzah.
No, you can't. No, you can't have any unleavened bread.
Oh, okay.
That's the point.
Okay. You wouldn't use tamtams for like.
Anyway, but yeah, the best. Yeah, that's what. Well, we can discuss in more detail when it's Nogei L'maisa. Gam bilvad ze yesh bedava remez el bitachon b'Hashem yisbarach baruch hu. So not only do we want no one to say, oh, that sacrificial meat smells disgusting, but it shows trust in God. You should not always try to eat less so you have leftovers for the next day. Biroso ki hakel tziva lechalos b'sar hakodesh mishavra shaito kilyon gamor v'lo ratzah shiyena b'briya acharkein. So God says, no, once the time for eating is over, that's it. You can't eat it anymore. You may not eat it anymore, so you might as well eat it now during the time when you're supposed to eat it. Because you're not supposed to, because it shows hashkafically, it shows a little bit of lack of trust in God when you say... when you say that I'm going to leave some over and have it tomorrow, it shows that you don't trust God, that he's going to provide you what you need for the next day. Not saying you should never have leftovers, it just makes it easier, you don't have to cook all the time, but you shouldn't say...
Except that business with the afkoma, part of that thing, putting something away for later.
No? It's the same meal.
Yeah, it's the same, right, exactly. Fine. Velo Adam, velo Behema, so nobody should have any benefit whatsoever from the sacrificial meat after its time is over. So, Midine HaMitzvah, the halacha of the mitzvah, Mash Amr Zichron of the Bracha, Shebechlal HaNosar VaPigul Shenisrafin, that included in this category of the meat that was the sacrifice that was slaughtered with the intention of making it invalid, or the max sacrificial meat that was left over, Heim Kol Psule HaMukdoshin Shekula Nisrafin Gamkein. Any type of sacrifice that had something happen to it that rendered it invalid must be burnt. The korban shenifsal o nispagel bevadai miyad nisraf. So if you know for sure that it's no good or that it was shechted with the thought of doing something to it that renders it invalid, so it was burnt immediately because you know for sure that it's not holy at all, so it has to be burnt. It still has some sort of holiness in the sense that you have to burn it, but it's not a good offering. If you're not sure whether the sacrifice became invalidated or not, so you're a little bit stuck. Why are you stuck? Because on the one hand, you're not allowed to eat it because it might be invalid. But on the other hand, if it is valid, then you're not allowed to just stop burn sacrificial meat. That's highly chutzpahdik. You're not, it's highly not in accordance with the attitude that you're supposed to have toward the sacrifices to just go ahead and be mafsa them and destroy them. So to ubar tsuraso v'achar kach nisraf. So the compromise is you're really stuck. It just has to be left to become inedible, or it has to go bad, and then you burn it, because then for sure it's no good. V'chol b'sbasar hanimtza b'azara evarim. So let's say you find meat in the temple courtyard, and you don't know what sacrifice it's from, but you have to assume that it has to be a certain type of offering in order for you to know what to do with it. So if it's cut up into big pieces, so you considered it to be, you assume that it's a burnt offering, olos, perush nadinoso shein olos. So we assume that there are burnt offerings in nimsa chatichos chatos. So if it's cut into smaller pieces in the manner that the eaten sin offerings are eaten, then you assume that it's a sin offering. Hanimtza b'Yerushalayim shlamim. If it's not in the temple courtyard, it's just found in other places in Yerushalayim, then you assume it's a shlamim, because shlamim, as kachim kalim, the less intense form of sacrifices, may be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim, not only in the temple premises. B'nafgamin alinyan shim avar echad v'achal mehen. So if somebody ate some of this meat and sinned, maybe al kol echad kaparos olafich hazakazo. So you have to bring atonement according to the assumption of whether it was an ola or a chatas or a shlomim. So the Minchas Chinuch says that there's no kapara. So for a ola, you have to bring a me'ila. For a chatas, you get malkus if you eat it. And you, for the shlomim, you don't really need any kapara at all. So they've... even though it wasn't so good that you did it, there's no technical punishment. So again, Minchas Chinuch says that the usage of the word kapara here is not exactly exact, because there is no kapara for the shlamim. There really is only a kapara for the ola and lashes for the chatos. Ve'al kol amru zichronim levracha. So on all of it, the sages tell us, so if you just find this meat, you don't know what's going on with it, so basically what you have to do for all of them is you just wait another day to make sure they're 100% sure in osar, then you take them out and you burn them. You burn it during the day. It has to be on the third day, specifically, not night. Even though that the shlamim only become prohibited at the beginning of the nighttime, you still have to wait. You can't do it. You shouldn't do it immediately when they become puzzle at the beginning of the nighttime. Rather, you wait till the next daytime. The rest of the details are explained in Pesachim and the end of Temurah. This really refers to the Kohanim. The Kohen Sha'avar Velo Saraf Hanosar. He neglected to perform a positive commandment. If he didn't burn it, not only did he violate the positive commandment, but he violated the negative commandment of don't leave it over. But there's no, in other words, we only receive malchus, lashes, for a lav where you actually get up and do something, but here you just didn't burn it. You left it over, so that would not receive the penalty of lashes. And the Rambam also points out that it's a lav hanitak lase. So since there's a lav that's connected to an ase, that you have to burn it to make amends. So since there's an ability to make amends by performance of a positive commandment, even though you violated a negative commandment, that would also be a reason that you would not receive the penalty of lashes.